Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked. Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about the books we'd like to recommend.
And our surprise guests this afternoon are the two of us.
That's right. You get to hear from us today.
And it just so happens that we both were reading stories that were inspired by H.P. Lovecraft's mythology.
It's true. We did not read these at the same time or under the same direction. We just happened to choose these two books to talk about today and realize that they were in the same universe, kind of.
At least somewhat related.
Somewhat related, at least by the author. Go ahead and throw out there H.P. Lovecraft. Not a great person.
No.
Pretty terrible, actually. Good books with terrible things in them sometimes.
In fact, the book that I'm going to be reviewing is a direct response to his pretty blatant racism and xenophobia.
Yes. So now that we got that out of the way, I don't want ever to talk about H.P. Lovecraft without talking about the fact that his works are great. But very problematic.
Yes.
And he was also very problematic.
And there are a lot of people that are, especially today, wrestling with that. Because you see so many references in video games and in different horror films and other writing that it is hard to disentangle a lot of the horror genre from Lovecraft's legacy.
Yes, definitely. The kind of atmospheric, terrible thing that I can't explain but drives me to insanity because I can't explain it. That whole kind of thing stems from him. But I think people are doing a much better job about calling that out before they reference it and saying, hey, by the way, he was terrible. We're not condoning anything he said in any of his works. We're just drawing from something that he created that happened to be tinged with this kind of like terrible background of racism and, like you said, xenophobia.
Yeah. Okay. So with that out of the way, how about you tell us about your
story? I'd love to go first because mine is basically the action film compared to your indie short film. It's got very little depth. I actually picked this up in audiobook form because I was going on a trip and I decided, and it was free, so I was like, why not? It's called 14, and it is about a guy named Nate who moves into a new apartment. And it's ridiculously cheap, shockingly cheap. He lives in, I believe, Los Angeles or San Diego, one of the, you know, incredibly expensive
places. Did it say how much his rent was?
It did. $500.
Whoa. Yes. No. You know there's a catch there. Like, they're going to be harvesting his organs or something.
Uh-huh. 100%. He was even a little weirded out by it, but he heard it by word of mouth from someone at a bar at a work event. And I'll read you a little bit of the promo for it because it kind of explains a lot about it. Padlocked doors, strange light fixtures, mutant cockroaches. Those are some of the odd things about Nate's new apartment. Of course, he has other things on his mind. He hates his job, he has no money in the bank, no girlfriend, no plans for the future. So while his home isn't perfect, it's livable. The rent is low, the property manager is friendly, and the odd little mysteries don't nag him too much. At least, not until he meets Mandy, his neighbor across the hall, who notices something unusual about her apartment. And Zila's apartment, and Tim's, and Veek's, because every room in this Los Angeles brownstone has a mystery or two. Mysteries that stretch back over 100 years. Some of them are in plain sight, some of them are behind locked doors, and all together these mysteries could mean the end of Nate and his friends, or the end of everything. So the reason I picked this up was because I liked the kind of like spooky, mysterious house thing. The characters? Pretty dull. Pretty boring.
Oh, really?
Nate was a little annoying.
Were they like your horror movie tropes?
Kind of. It was more, I don't want to trash on, like, the horror book / sci-fi book characters, but they tend to be, like, really 2D.
Yeah.
Nate was just this, like, really boring guy who hated his job and blamed everyone else for the fact that he hated his job and was like, well, they're all trash people who suck, so, you know, no wonder I hate my job because they're terrible. And because, sorry, male authors, but because it's a guy writing about a guy, he constantly is like, except for my coworker, she's hot. Or except for my new neighbor, she's also hot. Like, that kind of thing that's really annoying because, like, sure, maybe that's a thing that someone thinks about. It just feels weird to be in someone's head and, like,
he sounds like a real nice guy.
Yeah, he sounds like a nice guy, capital N, capital G.
Yeah.
But I will say that despite the fact that the character kind of annoyed me, I kept listening to it because the mysteries in the apartment really were interesting and they got into really cool ways of trying to solve these mysteries. One of them I will spoil for you. All the apartments in the building are completely different. Some of them are open concept. Wow. Some of them have, like, these teeny tiny rooms with walls they've built that make no sense because they cut up the space weirdly. Some of them have tiny kitchens. Some of them have huge kitchens. One of them is two stories. It's just a loft apartment, and which makes no sense in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it's something that no one talks about until they actually go into someone else's apartment. And they're like, oh, wait, your apartment is completely different than my apartment. And they're trying to figure it out, and they realize that they actually get into people's apartment by asking and measure out everything and draw up plans for the building because there are no plans on file at the local civil servant office.
Planning department.
Yeah, there you go. And when they draw up the plans, they realize some walls are normal. Some walls are almost 6 feet, like, in width. Like, they're
Whoa.
Just, yeah, they're huge. And those are, that's one of the many mysteries that they, like, slowly uncover. And the mysteries get more and more Lovecraftian as they go in. It starts with weird bugs, weird measurements, and then goes towards, like, some crazy, very, like, sci-fi slash horror stuff. Like, not normal anymore. So I kind of kept on for that because it was a really cool adventure trying to figure out what happened with this house and how it was built and everything. But yeah, the characters were a super big letdown. So if that's something that's really important to you, I would not pick up this book. But if you kind of like the idea of solving a mystery and you don't really care about who's doing it, it could be for you.
So tell us a little bit about the bugs. I have to ask, you know.
Yes. Of course. Okay, so they have these cockroaches. The problem is they have seven legs.
Okay.
They all have seven legs. It's a completely normal, stable mutation in every single cockroach in the building. They're also green, and under black light, they glow.
Okay.
So one of the girls in the building gets really excited by this. She's going to school for biology. And she takes some of them in a tank. She collects them and then is about to bring them to her lab to figure out what is going on, because it is very weird to have these, like, tiny island of seven-legged, green, glow-in-the-dark cockroaches in Los Angeles. But she realizes about 50 feet from the house, they all die. And it's not, like, a slow death. They almost, like, immediately keel over about 50 feet. She actually marks it in chalk all the way around the building. Like a good scientist. And that's one of those weird things that they're trying to figure out. They don't really solve that mystery, though. They kind of do, but not, like, in detail, like the architecture mystery. But that was one of the really cool things about it. All these little, tiny idiosyncrasies that most people don't pay attention to. They're like, nope, I'm not gonna look at it. I pay $500 a month in Los Angeles, and I can deal with some weird bugs. But occasionally, they'll have people who look into it, and the management is very not happy about it. Basically, if they see you snooping around too many times, they just kick you out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for a reason.
Interesting. So you said you listened to it on audio. How was the audio recording?
The audio was really good. It was weird because the narrator was, like, doing accents for the characters. And sometimes I'm very iffy about that, but he actually did a good job. Like, he actually did a realistic accent and not, like, a weird stereotypical one. Because one of the characters is Indian. And it took me a while. I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. But because he was doing, like, an actual realistic accent, I was just like, okay, maybe it's fine. But he was a pretty good narrator. It was one of the reasons I stuck with the book, despite the fact that the main character kind of annoyed me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really saved the book. Okay, so, like I said, I would recommend it for people who are really interested in a mystery, especially, like, an atmospheric mystery, not necessarily a my friend's dead and who killed her, because while there are a few deaths in the book, it's not related to the mystery, really. But what about your book? Your book, like I said, is the indie short film version of...
Mine's a little bit heavier, too.
Of the Lovecraft narrative, so tell us a little.
Let me back up a little bit before I talk specifically about that book. Yeah. I have actually kept an eye on Victor Laval. He's the author of this novella for quite a while. He comes up with some really interesting horror titles. In fact, the first time I noticed him was when I saw the publication for The Devil in Silver, which is about a guy that is stuck in a mental institution, but he is swearing up and down that he is sane and he does not belong there, but at the same time he's being tormented by this horrible nurse. So
okay.
I think that the premise for a lot of his writings is really interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfectly reasonable fear that someone feels like could happen to them.
Yeah.
Because once you're in the mental institution, everyone says, yes, I'm sane.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those like underlying fears that really speak to people.
So I have long really wanted to try some of his work, mm-hmm. but I have super limited time with having a toddler. So yes. when I saw that he published a novella, I was like, this is perfect for me. I can actually finish this. Because I knew once I picked up one of his things, I would yes. want to keep reading. Mm-hmm. And so this one actually was based on slash inspired by the story The Horror at Red Hook, mm-hmm. which is one of H.P. Lovecraft's more xenophobic works.
Yes.
In fact, it didn't sell very well. It was his attempt to put out something that would appeal more to like your detective pulp readers. Yeah. So it
as
actually
opposed to the horror.
Yes. So yeah. one of the main characters from the original story is Malone, who works for the police department. Mm-hmm. And he has a little bit of like otherworldly sensitivity, so he tends to notice things a little bit better than everybody else, mm-hmm. and because of that he ends up getting assigned to this particular case, mm-hmm. which involves a guy named Sidham, I think his first name is Robert, who is basically going to the Red Hook district, which is filled with a large immigrant population, mm-hmm. to try to learn about their folklore. Mm-hmm. And he ends up getting involved because Sidham's family distant relatives hire a private investigator to follow him, mm-hmm. to basically try to prove that he's senile and losing his mind so that they can go put him in a home and enjoy his wealth.
Yes.
So that is the underlying premise of it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the original story is really ugly. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to see such a bold and well-written response to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it took 90 years before somebody did that, but this, The Ballad of Black Tom, is the book that I'm actually reviewing, and it is stellar. Mm-hmm. So in the book, yes, it still has Malone, and it still has Robert Sidham, and they are central characters, but you have a new character who is a young black man from Harlem, mm-hmm. who is almost like he takes a lot of side jobs, almost a little bit con artist, but okay. still relatively
on the up and up.
Yeah, relatively. It's yeah. not like he's actually doing anything wrong. He just recognizes a good scam when he sees it,
yeah.
and will seize that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Tommy is taking care of his father who lives with him, and so he's always looking for those random odd jobs to try to support the two of them. Yeah. And he actually ends up getting hired by Robert Sidham to come and play guitar for an evening for them,
okay.
where he's hosting a whole bunch of the people from Red Hook to try to talk about his prophetic visions for the future.
Oh, gosh.
So anyway, Tommy ends up getting roped into this, mm-hmm. and as a result, he and his father end up being kind of investigated by Malone and the private investigator because they mm-hmm. see him coming and going from Robert's home.
Yeah.
Really bad things happen to the two of them at the hands of the police. Mm-hmm. Tom ends up becoming kind of a henchman for Robert Sidham.
Okay.
And then I won't go any further into that because I don't want to give any spoilers.
Yes.
But one thing that was really beautiful about this novella, it's 150 pages, so it's yes. really almost like book length. Mm-hmm. You feel like you're getting a very full story.
Yes.
So it alternates between Tommy's point of view and Malone's point of view. Mm-hmm. And some of the ways that thread is woven at the very end is just absolutely stunning storytelling. Like, I loved, like, random things that you would see at the very beginning from Tommy's perspective would eventually get filled in with Malone's perspective mm-hmm. as well. And it was beautiful. Like, there were no loose threads anywhere.
That's always great to see. One reason I love novellas is because it doesn't give the author that chance to make, like, too much happen.
Yeah.
They really get the chance to tighten up their work, which I think is really important in horror and mystery.
Yes.
It's really easy to just meander off. So it's nice to hear that it worked really well. I will have to pick it up because, like I said, I like the Lovecraft universe, but I don't even read much of his original work anymore because, you know, nothing ruins a nice short story more than a little bit of racism.
Exactly.
In. Yeah. So reading things that are inspired by it and have that same tone, but actually are adding something to the conversation.
Yes.
Is really important. I will say there was a video game that came out that I think is a similar, it's based on the same novel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's about a detective and there is he's trying to solve a mystery in this weird town. I don't know if it's based on the same story, but because you said the detective with, like, kind of the extrasensory perception.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the same main character in that, and they actually, they don't talk about it nearly as much, I don't think, but they do add a little thing at the beginning that's, like, BTW, H.P. Lovecraft is a problem.
Right. Well, and one of the reasons why I liked this particular book so much, I feel like the horror at Red Hook was where Lovecraft's xenophobia was on true display. Yes. Like, he was really talking horribly about, like, the immigrant population. Yes. So this particular book, The Ballad of Black Tom, did a really good job at responding to that and showing the other side of that.
Yes.
And so the real horrors were what the people were doing to each other, as opposed to, yes, you still had some of that really looming cosmic horror. It would not be H.P. Lovecraft inspired if it didn't include that.
But I think the issue with him is that there's the horror of the unknown, but he kind of
translated that to other people.
Yes. Instead of saying the unknown, i.e. the infinite universe, he would be like, but also those people who moved in down the street. I don't know about them.
Right.
Yeah. It was definitely kind of a bleeding over that was not as scary, because you're just like, they're just people.
Exactly.
I don't understand why you're so scared. So what's something that you really liked about the characters in this novel? Is there like a certain person or a certain...
You see Tom undergo a transformation in this book that is absolutely chilling.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of times I have actually read more than one book that was based on Lovecraft, where one of the central characters has decided that what humans have done to them is so bad that they're going to embrace this otherworldly monster.
Yes.
So you see a little bit of that in this. And I don't want to go too far into it, but it was chilling. It was amazing.
Okay, so let's get to the... Well, first, what reader would you recommend this book for? Would you go the traditional detective pulp fiction route?
No, I would not. But anybody who likes horror that's a thinker's horror.
Yes, a little highbrow horror.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, Laval used to write literary fiction.
Oh, okay.
And then he just started realizing how much he really liked writing horror.
Yeah, so I mean, it's literary nothing fiction, but scarier.
Yeah. So the prose is really, really well done.
Yes. Okay, that's good. So if you're really into beautiful writing and... literary fiction, maybe, but you don't mind a little horror.
Yeah.
It might be a good genre bridge for you. Do we have it here at the library?
We do not, unfortunately, but we have some of his other works.
Okay. We do not have my book in print. We have a digital copy of it.
Yeah, I know we have The Changeling and The Devil in Silver that I mentioned earlier.
Okay. And if you like those, you can purchase your own copy of The Ballad of Black Tom. Okay, so let's get to the game show portion. We'll... cosmic horror music.
I'll do my best. Man, we are like really hitting it strong with all the spooky, scary music.
Well, it is October.
I know.
We'll get to, I want to say real quick, I don't think you cast the main characters.
I did not.
I did a little bit of work. It was really hard because the characters weren't really characterized very well. I will say, though, real quick, Daniel Radcliffe as the main character, he was kind of boring and kind of, like, very much, like, middle-aged, like, hasn't really gone anywhere and blames everyone else for it. Like, that kind of trope in, like, in movies. And I think Daniel Radcliffe has actually played those characters before. So he'd be perfect. And maybe, you know, maybe he'd make a more sympathetic person. So we'll go ahead and get to rapid fire questions.
So wait. Before we get there.
Sure.
I, for some reason, thought this book was a teen book. Is it an adult book?
It is an adult book.
Okay,
yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. That's fair. I am the teen librarian and I read a lot of teen books, so it's completely fair to think that. But no, this is something that I grabbed off of Audible real quick on a trip, so I didn't really look too much into it. But yes, adult horror. There's not really a ton of adult stuff in there, but
yeah,
wouldn't really appeal to teenagers unless they were really into horror.
Okay, that makes sense. Sorry about that.
It's okay. So we'll get to rapid fire questions. Leslie,
is that fair if I ask you what the book cover looks like?
No, it's not. I remember.
Okay.
I looked it up because I only have my printout with me. Okay, so the cover of the book, I've seen two of them, but one of them is way more prevalent. It's the cover that I saw first. It is a steel door that's chained about like 10 times and has like a bunch of padlocks on it. There are a number of doors in the actual book that are padlocked to infinity. Like there are
dozens. Because that's not a red flag at all.
Yeah, yeah. So most of the padlocks are covered with so much dust that it's very obvious that no one actually goes in. They're just padlocked for your safety.
That's still not reassuring.
It's not. They try to get in some of them and it's a bad idea. Okay, so let me go ahead and ask you, what will be your lasting impression of this book? What's like the one thing that you'll take away.
Just because the source material is a flawed hot mess, it doesn't mean that you can't make something incredible out of it.
Yeah. It's like upcycling.
Yeah. Yeah.
You took some trashy remnants and made it into something beautiful.
Yeah. And I mean, this is still, it's a standalone story. I went through and skim read the horror at Red Hook, which really, the writing is really clunky in that one. It was in his early writing too.
Okay. Yeah.
And yes, it takes some definite elements from that. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the final scenes, once again, I'm not spoiling anything really. Yeah. One of the final scenes in The Ballad of Black Tom is with Malone, who is on indefinite leave for all of the things that he has seen. And that's actually how the horror at Red Hook starts.
Yeah. That's a common theme in Lovecraft, and it actually happens a little bit in the book that I'm reading, too. People just get to the point in a lot of his stories where they've seen so many terrible things that they're just unable to function as humans anymore.
Yeah, they just kind of become incoherent blobs.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that I like his writing, because that's a very interesting take on horror, is just the idea that you get to a point where humans just can't take it anymore, and they just shut down.
Yeah.
Okay, next question.
Can't ask you what kind of house the character lives in.
I can go into detail and spoil the rooms.
Yeah, actually describe one of your favorite rooms in there.
Okay, so there are, every room has its own thing that you discover eventually. So this is a teensy bit of a spoiler, so close your ears if you don't want to hear. There is one room that is permanently vacant, and they keep asking why. And for some reason, everyone's very shifty about it until he talks to one of the old ladies who's been there forever. Everyone who lives there for more than, I think, about a month commits suicide. Ew. So they just don't rent it out anymore, which is nice of them, I guess.
Yeah.
I think the last person was in the 70s or 80s. But yeah, like 5 or 6 people in a row committed suicide in the room. And no one knows why, but it's part of the mystery of the house.
Ooh.
Spooky. Okay, so last question. I kind of know the answer to this because you've explained it a little bit, but I want to get a little more info. Did this book have an antagonist, or was it a larger issue? Or was there one person who was clearly, like...
It kind of had a lot of antagonists. Like, really.
I mean, that seems fair.
Man, so at times, Malone was kind of complacent.
Mm-hmm.
But allowed bad things to happen.
Yeah.
But the private investigator, whose name I can't even remember, I want to say it was something like Howard or something, was definitely an antagonist.
Okay.
Plus, you do have, like, there are a few times where some of Lovecraft's monsters make a bit of an appearance.
Yes. Clearly so, antagonists.
Yeah, yeah. If those aren't antagonists, I don't know what are. So it was almost full of antagonists.
Okay, so if you want to see a bunch of antagonists fighting each other.
Pretty much.
Perfect book. Okay, so our last section is the random die roll. I do not have my book because I'm a bad student, but Leslie will go ahead and roll us out.
Well, and also you had it digitally.
That's true. Audiobook.
Tommy played a club where Buckeye made business. One evening, Buckeye sidled next to Tommy at the bar and asked where he'd learned to sing so badly. Did he take lessons or was it a natural gift? They became fast friends. I know that was more than one sentence, but it was kind of explaining one of the side characters, Buckeye, and how he and Tommy became good friends.
And it was a good string of sentences. They were obviously very related. That was very funny, though. I feel like everyone's had that moment where where they know they sing that badly and someone mentions it and they're just like, stop it. I know. But I guess thank us for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for bringing a horror book and for finding one somehow magically
interconnected.
Yeah. And stay tuned next week for one more set of horror recommendations.
Ooh. Bye.